My name is Ben. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Amen. And it's only by God's grace, sponsorship, and program outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm sober today. I just want to thank Chris, and I want to thank the group for giving me the privilege of sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and especially how I developed a relationship with my higher power. It was kind of ironic, because when Chris gave me the date, I said it great, because this Sunday, the 24th of June, it'd be 18 years that God separated me from alcohol for the last time. So it's kind of nice being around that time. So anyway, I it took me an hour, and I said, geez, I've made some notes here so I don't lose track, but it's not going to be that bad now, right? It's going to be my experience I'm going to share. You know, everybody has their own. And what does it say? We all have to have the same experience, okay? So if you disagree with me, that's okay. Just don't tell me I'm wrong. I'm married, so that's all right. You know, to a black belt Al-Anon, she's right here, my lovely wife. I once heard a guy talk about sharing at a meeting that if you have some sort of, if you believe this way, you're full of crap. And I'm like, geez, you know, imagine telling Bill W.'s white light experience was nothing more than hallucination. We may not be here now. So, but anyway, I struggled for years with alcohol. And a lot of times, you know, we hear people talk about how they struggled, you know, with their drinking and what they did and stuff. But my problem was stopping. You know, I never realized I had a problem at first. My first few times I started drinking, I was a teenager, and I got a nice little buzz, and I said, "Oh, this is great stuff! I can't wait to do this again." And I guess as the book calls it, the average temperate drinker, that's okay. But it didn't take long for those, you know, every Friday after school, hang out with the fellas, and I started saying, "Geez, let's get some more." And guys were saying, "What, Ben? We got enough. We got the nice buzz. We're feeling good." And those are my early years, so it wasn't too bad. I was able to deal with it. But it didn't take long before I was starting to really, you know, go get some more money, go get another half pint, and drinking all that crap. And, you know, imagine drinking something, throwing up, and saying, "Boy, I can't wait to have some more." But that's the nature of this illness, you know, how it grabs us. In my early days, the consequences weren't so severe. You know, you didn't think they were anyway. You didn't realize you were setting yourself up for all the other stuff. But, you're a kid, you drink with your friends, you know, we're all doing the same stuff, no big deal. That's what we felt at that time. But, you know, as I got older, marriage, children, the job, and I started watching how, it's become an abusive husband, the father that wasn't there, and the kids were deprived of my presence, my love, and, getting, trouble with the job and everything, too. It was funny because, they used to say, I was a specialist on Wall Street in commodities, and it was a pretty good job. And it was hard to get replaced, so that's what people had to put up with my stuff. And the word was always like, Ben does a great job, when he's here. And I thought that was a compliment, And it was really, they were tired of my nonsense. But, it was Wall Street, the five-year plan. You work one place for a few years, and then somebody says, "Oh, let's, you're looking for another guy." And sometimes my reputation didn't spread too far out, so I was able to, keep jumping from job to job. Like I said, I always believed in God, and I never asked him to stop, help me to stop drinking. I always asked him to help me not get into trouble. And my foxhole prayers were actually pre-foxhole prayers, so to speak. I used to ask God not to get me into trouble, but I'm going out drinking. Don't let me drink too much. Don't let me miss work. Don't let me get into a fight. Don't let me get beat up, stuff like that. But I never asked him to help me to stop drinking. And my drinking continued, And it was odd because, if you ask me, how come you don't stop? And I said, "Because I'm having a good time. I don't want it to end." And I'm thinking that's the reason. And I had no idea that I had no control, when I started drinking. And like I said, my problem was always trying to control it, stopping for a couple of weeks, hiding money and all that stuff. And it sort of worked that way for a while. I hide money at work I remember one time it was a 4th of July weekend, and it was on a Monday, and I said, "Let me put some money in my safe at work." So this way, after the 3-day weekend, I got some money for, my pocket money. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. I was with my cousin. I said, "Let's go into the city." And it was way before 9/11 happened, so the security was kind of lax. And we just walked in the building and waved for the security guard, walked out, and I took the money and walked out, and that was it. And the rest of it was gone. And I'm planning all these things, but I don't think I have a problem, It's just the way life is, stuff like that. And I did all those temporary stops. You know, I'd stop, you know, made the New Year's resolutions. And it was always January 2nd because you're still drinking January 1st. But my birthday's in January. And I'm an alcoholic. And I wasn't one of those guys that, you know, I had to have a terrible life in order to drink. You know, I drank for any reason I could find. You know, like I said, I would try to stop, cut back, whatever, on January, New Year's, and my birthday's in January. So, well, you know, again, my thinking, everybody drinks on their birthday. Then I try stopping for a little while again, 2 weeks ago, by 3 weeks, whatever, and then, it's St. Paddy's Day, you know, everybody drinks on St. Paddy's Day. Matter of fact, being Italian, my last name ends in an O, and the Irish guys on Gatwood said, we're going to put the O in the front of your name. So they made me an honorary Irishman, and all that did was just validate my drinking, you know. Good, I have a reason to drink. You know, like I said, I just look for excuses to drink, a reason, whatever. A good day, bad day, didn't matter. I washed the car, reward myself, what a good job. You know, I thought for any possible reason I could have a drink. You know, that's what I did. And, you know, finally took off, and then I got to a point in my life where I said I needed to stop, and again, I didn't know how. I always look at that first step of powerlessness, and I had to understand that the first step didn't say I couldn't drink. It says that I'm on my power. I will. Everything I try to do on my own, I would drink. There was just no hope. So I never understood that, you know, until I got here, about powerlessness and no, you know, lack of control. And I found that I had enough. And it took me a long time. You know, like I said, all these efforts of getting in and out of trouble, never any jail, never any, no DWIs, and, you know, waking up in strange cities and stuff like that. So I just felt like I was the average guy that drank too much, maybe. Not everybody's picture of an alcoholic is different. A lot of us look at the guy that's, you know, cleaning up windshields with them dirty rags at the bottom of the bridge, 59th Street Bridge, but that's, you know, you get here and you find there's doctors and lawyers and a lot of educated people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's an illness. It's not a matter of willpower. Like my father said, I thought you were smarter than that. And I said, you got to see all the smart guys that are in AA, Dad. It's got nothing to do with it, you know. And I'm thankful for all the committees that we have here that go out to the various professionals and talk to them, because when I finally got beaten up and I had enough, I just couldn't take it anymore. I tried getting to AA once. I borrowed my father's car. And my mother's like, you're not that bad. And, like, you know, they only saw, like, the little bit of drinking in the house. Like, you know, coming home already drunk, so I'm just coming home and falling asleep. You know, they didn't realize all the drinking I had done before. You know, and it was always somebody else's fault. I had a mother that was like that, you know. You know, when I told her, it was my friend Paul that gave me my first drink, she goes, Paul, you're such a good kid. Oh, boy. But, you know, it's something we enjoyed as a kid. But, like, you know, most of my friends, you know, back then, they stopped and I couldn't. Anyway, you know, I tried getting here. I went to the Remember When meeting way back when it used to just feel like 100 people there. It was packed on a Monday night. And I got there and there was no place to park, you know, so same old stuff, you know, it's not that bad, I can handle it, and I went back home. And there's no way I can remember how long it took after that. And when I went on my last run, I started out as usual the Friday night. Wednesday night. See, most of my drink was on the weekends, too, so I couldn't afford to go out during the week so much. But every time the opportunity came up, many times I wouldn't show up for work, or I'd show up for work really drunk. I mean, a good friend of mine, Billy, used to tell me how I'd show up for work with my bowling ball and bowling shirt on, you know. So I used to bowl on Thursday nights, and it was the Tavern League. And we didn't even have a name for our team, so we called ourselves the Wanderers. And we would, whichever team we bowled against that night, we went back to their bar. So I got to know a lot of the bars, you know, in the Ozone Park, Richmond Hill, Woodhaven area. And it was a fun night, supposed to be. Meanwhile, you know, the wife's at home and I'm out bowling and having a good time and stuff. And we're not realizing any of these things yet. You know, if I was to take a lie detector test and tell you I'm going out for just, you know, two or three drinks because I got something to do tomorrow, I got to be there, I probably would have passed it. You know, because deep down inside, I didn't want to go out all night long. I didn't want to miss another day of work, or I didn't want to miss this appointment. I couldn't make appointments on Saturday morning because the rule was, you're a working man, you go out on Friday nights, you're single, just after one of my many divorces. You go out on Friday nights, that's it. So I remember canceling my doctor's appointment. It was right around the corner from me, and there was no way I was keeping an 11 o'clock appointment. He used to, you know, it was only there till 12 o'clock, and if you're an alcoholic, you know you're not getting up at 12 o'clock on a Saturday after Friday night. And you're probably somewhat still drinking. And that was one of the big things when I started doing cocaine. And I'm going to tell you, I'm an alcoholic through and through. I drank for years before I even tried it. I didn't even like the stuff. I didn't like the way it felt. When I did what I was drinking, wow, I can drink all night long. And I was staying out even longer, spending even more money. Every time I said I had enough of this stuff, I threw the cocaine down the toilet. I said, never again, I'm not touching this stuff. But never get rid of the booze. So I still felt I could control it. I'd go to church and I'd ask God to help me hit the lotto and stuff so I could, I'd say, and how much did I put in a basket? I said, well, I played $4 in lotto. I'll put $4 in a basket. And God's up there saying, Ben, put $10 in. You come in 2 weeks in a row. And my thinking was that if I hit this lotto, then I can just drink, go out every night and just a few hours every night. Something I've never done before, but this is what I'm going to do if I had all that money. Now I don't have to work, so I can just go out and have a few drinks every night and relax. There's no pressure on me. I have to get it all done tonight like I used to think. That was the kind of sick thinking. That happens. I still play the lotto, too. And so it's one of the things, when the lotto was really big and I mean, whenever I used to pray to God, it was always, God, if you give me this, I'll do that. He always had to perform first. I never said, what would you have me do today? Something I had to learn when I got here. I was always cutting a deal with God, and if he didn't perform, that's it. God, you broke your deal. I'm not doing my end. And, so even to this day, when the lotto was really big, I would say, all right, God, if I win, I'm going to give most of it away. Not all of it, naturally, right? It's always, so I'm going to take care of a lot of people, and I can just hear God up there saying, Ben, that's my job. I'll take care of everybody. You go out and you work. You go out for that $1 or $2 million you're going to keep for yourself. So I like to think my high power is a sense of humor. And God brought me here. Jeez, this is a long road. Like I said, I got here finally. I went out that one night on a Wednesday night, the same innocent stuff. I just stopped at my friend's house, had a drink, had another drink, and then I said, lend me some money. I'm going to the bar across the street, and I was out on a tear. And that's why, like I said, I was grateful for all these these committees we have in AA that, they go out and we have people that bring the meetings in. We also have the people that talk to the facilitators and explain to them what AA is and what we do and what we don't do. One of these senior conventions a few years back, there was a guy named Tommy I, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but the way he said is that when an alcoholic, when he hits the wall, when he's done, we want the people he sees before they get to us to give us a good reference. And when I went to my job and I told them I had a problem, he said, don't go anywhere, we're going to call you right back. Right away, they gave me an EAP to go to. I sat with the guy the next day and he told me, go to, I said, I'm going to come back on, there was a Saturday, I think that was the 25th, June, and he told me to come back on Tuesday, and he said, because I'm going to have a program for you to go to, but you have to wait to get into it, but in the meantime, I want you to go to 2 AA meetings, and I went to like 5 of them, and this is why I truly feel I was blessed. When I walked through those doors, there were like 5 guys that I used to hang out with, and I knew one guy was already here, a friend of mine, John. And the other 4 guys, I was surprised to see them here. These guys are terrible. How can they be here? And one guy, like 10 years maybe. Another guy, like 4 or 5. And the other 2 guys were just getting a few months before me, but they were here. And a couple of other guys came over and he greeted me. But the funny thing was, when I went to the AP, he told me to go to an AA meeting, 2 of them, and the first one I went to, I called up the intergroup office in Queens, and I got this guy John on the phone, and he was known as Johnny Bada Bing, some people still believe that, no last name stuff, and that's not what the literature says. It says use last names, especially when doing service, not just only. But anyway, it's in the literature. I didn't think it out myself. And the last original thought I had died of loneliness. I don't come up with too many good ones. So I get to the meeting and the funny thing was Johnny O would know this guy Eddie. I'm working the car service and I spoke with the dispatcher and he knew my situation. He said, Ben, before you go to the meeting, he says, you just got to pick up this one guy. And it turned out the guy was at Elmhurst Hospital and he was just getting out of detox and it was a kid from my block that I knew from years ago. And I had no idea he had a problem with it, but he was going home and I'm like, but I got to get to a meeting. Eddie, goddamn, you screw me up. And so I got to the meeting late, but I got there, and like I said, I was surrounded by people, and I'm asking for this guy, John, because the guy spoke, this guy, Johnny Bada Bing, was, he said, I'll meet you at the meeting, and I got there, I'm looking for him, and I'm asking, like, some of the guys I already knew, is there a guy named John here? I'm looking for a guy named John. And they're going, Johnny O, and I said, he didn't tell me his last name. So is Johnny O here? And I said, the guy didn't tell me it was Johnny O. And so then somebody else said, did you see Johnny O? I said, well, I think Johnny O's over there. And I said, but I didn't see Johnny O. I don't know the guy. Said, I'm getting resentment against this guy, Johnny O. And I haven't even met him yet. And believe it or not, I still have my meeting book from that night. His name is in there, John O, my sponsor, and he still is, whether he likes it or not. And his name is in there, and I still don't remember seeing him that night. I don't know, but eventually, you know, I was hanging out with a couple of friends, and actually one friend, the guy, like I said, I knew was here already, and you know what, he wasn't a big book guy, and he still isn't, but he stays clean. You know, guy asked me at the meeting, how long you been clean? And I said, I took a shower this morning. I'm an alcoholic. I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic at an AA meeting. We're going to talk AA language, you know, so. And anyway, so my friend, I asked John about doing step work. This other guy, John, my friend, and he says, you know, he doesn't do that kind of stuff. Look for somebody. And I saw, you know, Johnny at the meetings. I liked his serenity. I liked the way he spoke, very quiet. And I always wanted to, I said, I liked his serenity. I like that stuff. Unfortunately, I was more fire and brimstone. But it took me a while to calm down a little bit. But one thing he taught me was never to turn my back on an alcoholic. And I still sponsor people. I don't stop in service and stuff. But anyway, I hooked up with John, and we started going to the step work. And my idea was, you know, my idea of God, like I said, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, it tells us, you know, to thine own self be true. I did not despise God. I did not think it was his fault. And I did not deny God because, the only reason why, because I was too lazy to go to church on Sunday. I did not have a dislike for God. I did not blame him for any of my problems. You know, and you got to be honest. Some people, they don't want to go to church. Oh, I don't believe in God. So, okay, I'm an atheist. Now I'm an agnostic because I don't want to go to church. You know, if you're honest about it, that's what you're, sorry. A little unsteady with the knee. If I fall, I'll just grab the mic here. So I didn't have a problem with God, but I just didn't understand. You know, again, my God is always, you know, God, I need you. Always praying, ask God for something. You know, I had no idea about him. You know, me doing for him. So, you know, and like I said, you know, when you get a toothache, you go to the dentist, you know, you go to the chiropractor for your back, you go to the podiatrist for your feet. So I came to AA, and I didn't think God had anything to do with this. God was in the church. You know, God, you know, pray, you know, cure this person and this thing, give me this and give me that and all that stuff. And I didn't think it had anything to do with alcohol, you know, alcoholism. I found that out in a hurry. Like I said, my sponsor, he showed me how to get a relationship with God. It's one thing to believe in God. I mean, I believe in him. The devil believes in God. That's why he fears him so much. But I had no understanding of what God was about. Probably still don't. You know, it's a mystery, I guess, in ways. And if I say it a certain way, people are going to say, oh, you're full of crap. And I don't care. You know what? We all have our own belief system. And that's what we need to stick with. If it kept me here for 18 years, and I can honestly say a good, happy, joyous, and free 18 years. So anyway... So we got to the second step, and I couldn't understand the powerlessness. The first step was the powerlessness. The second step was the power, you know. Because now I'm not looking at God. I'm looking at AA, and I'm like... And at the beginning, I'm looking at guys like we're in pretty bad shape. Some of them, I was going to. I'm like, I'm going to rely on them, and, you know, this is crazy. But one important thing he told me, Johnny, he said to me, if you have a problem with a power greater than yourself... than a power other than yourself, because as long as you believe in that first step that it's not you, it's got to be something else, whatever it is. You got a whole bunch of guys here that were sober, some, like I said, some for like I think 8-9 years, something like that, another guy for 5-6 that I knew, and then there's a whole bunch of other guys, you know, you heard their stories and what they went through, and they were, you know, 15-20 years. I thought that was unfathomable, that kind of, you know, not drinking for that long of a time. So I'm going to have to sit if you guys don't mind. It's getting a little... My half hour's up for standing. Thanks, sorry. Thank you, sir. Oh, God, it's stiff. Thanks. Okay, anyway, I've got my train of thought got derailed again. Anyway, I believe in a power other than myself, But it didn't take me long. I wasn't thick-headed about my, you know, about a reliance on God. When we got to that third step and made that decision, and, you know, God was it. And I said, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. And, we sat into the fourth step. And for me, every step I did, to me, was a step closer to a relationship with my higher power. Fortunately, some of them were better. I mean, when I did that fifth step with John, he was on his retreat. I mean, this had to be the longest I ever went between steps. Him and I just couldn't hook up to sit down and to make the time for all the, to sit down and do a fifth step. And we both worked and whatever, all the stuff going on in our lives, and we finally, he was on his retreat. He says, come to my retreat. And I got yelled at by an old-timer saying I should never have gone on his retreat. It was his. And I had to make amends to John for that. And I didn't steal the sweater. But anyway, we sat there till 3 o'clock. And we did a lot of sharing, a lot of crying. And I did most of the crying. Finally got to look at myself. And how was I going to get out of this? And I think, I don't know, the way John brought it to me, I really felt that, I needed to have this God in my life now. And it was a God of my understanding. I didn't have to go, running through books and reading stuff, right? At that time, you educate yourself later on, but, for that time, I was comfortable where I was. And I'd say, like I said, each step was a step closer, but that fifth step was like a big jump. I mean, I tell you, when I drove home, I don't think my tires touched the road. I mean, I just felt, such a lift. And John said to me, like, most of the guys from his home group back then, it was Pathway to Freedom, most of the group was at the retreat, and they got nobody speaking. So he says, when you go home, take care of that hour's time. And he said, but go to the group, tell them you're the incoming speaker. Now, at Pathway to Freedom, they would read from As Bill Sees It, and they would draw a page number out of the jar. I just finished doing a fifth step with John, and that page number stayed with me ever since. And I pull out page number from As Bill Sees It, page 126. I mean, it's to God, to ourselves, and another. I thought they were joking around. I thought John called the head or something, and they put on page 126 in the jar. But there's all other page numbers in there, and God, it was. Like I said, God does have a sense of humor. I just couldn't believe it. It was great because I had just done it. I didn't learn how to lie about the step yet because I just finished doing it real. So it was a great experience. But like I said, that was a big jump for me. When I moved through 6 and 7, now I was going to ask God to move these because I just couldn't get rid of these things on my own. I couldn't understand it. Holding on to stuff and festering with it. Why don't you get rid of this stuff? I'm like, that makes sense. And the seventh step, I said sixth and seventh step. The ninth step, again, another humbling experience, praying first. And it's one thing John always told me about was going to God. To this day, I'll call him up. He says, did you go to God? And he says, yes, John, he told me to call you up. I got a little smart after a while in this fellowship, but it's true. When Bill had that was out in Akron that time, he didn't call his sponsor up. He said he wasn't in good shape probably, but he went to another alcoholic and helped him out. And John's always taught me that. And the idea was going to God first, and it really clears up so much for me. Making amends, difficult thing to do, and I had to go back to people. That I didn't like, people that hurt me first, the old thing, they hurt me, and I had to, like I said, I had to get rid of that stuff and just say, and make amends for what I, the harms I caused. And again, I had to pray before some of them was so difficult to do, but, when you get to that point, that's why, I always feel anyway, that's why the steps are in order. I couldn't have done amends right away. I was somebody rejecting them, and then I'd be all upset, it's not worth it, I'm going to go back out and drink, drinking's not an excuse anymore for me. There's nothing there. I mean, I can still overreact to situations, but at least the drink problem's been removed. So the overreaction part, we can still work on that. But the important part was all that prayer I needed to do. But anyway, we got to the 10th step, and again, it was all about God again. It says when fear, anger, jealousy, resentment, when these crop up, not if, because they're always happening. I was just sharing with Tommy. My wife and I may be going away. Well, we are going away. We're starting to make plans to go away again in October. But all our vacation points are gone. We'd be able to, son was able to help us out because he works at Disney. My wife had points at the job. We were able to get airline tickets, not costing us anything. She said to me,
how come you weren't overjoyed? I said, because the first thing that hit me was the fear of having to walk around and not having a scooter at my disposal. Because I use a scooter when I go to the theme parks at Disney World. We go there a lot. And my Mickey watch on. And we go there a lot with club members. And I had to rent the scooter to get to go around the parks. It just wasn't fun walking. It was too painful. But it got to the point where I had to, get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. I needed the scooter. That's how bad my knee got. And that fear kicked up. And she goes, then why are we going? I says, because I'm just not going to let it stop me. And, I have to pray on it. I'm going to do a lot of praying before and after. And I can, you take care of the things that need to be done. You get the scooter. We try not to overdo things. And, we take a little by slowly. When the time comes, who knows, maybe they'll invent the cure by then. So there's no sense in worrying about it now. The doctor said to me that I'll probably have to get arthroscopic on my knee and there may be a knee replacement eventually. And I says, well, when eventually is today, then I'll be concerned about it. But right now, that's in the future and we're not going to worry about it now. So it's the idea of, getting rid of these fears and stuff and going to God first. It doesn't say when these crop up, run to a meeting, call your sponsor. It says we ask God to remove them. And it works. It's unbelievable how it works for me. And the 10-step promises, they work better for me than the 9-step. I could still get drunk on the 9-step prayers, and the 9-step promises, rather. Financial insecurity, geez. I'd still find the money. I'd be, bills, stacked up, and I'd still find the money to go out and find a drink. But when I got to those 10-step promises and what they were doing for me and with little effort on my part, he was doing it, All I had to do was, and sometimes it's not a matter of asking God to do it. It's instilled. Sometimes it's just a normal reaction that I live with nowadays. And I can't get too comfortable with that. I still need to, talk to him every day and throughout the day. It doesn't matter. Because I was one of those guys, I don't think a lot of people like them. I want everybody to like them. And if I'd help an old lady cross the street, some of the guys in the fellowship would say, look at Ben, what a nice guy he is. And the other people would be saying, look at Benny showing off. Mm. And I said, well, how do I please those people? And I used to call up John about that, and he says, it's not your business to please them. And always bring me back to that 11th step, praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out, because I think I can do whatever God wants me to do, but I'm going to do it on my own, God. I got it, And then, whenever I share about it, I always say, I'm telling God I got this one. It's not that big. But I'm not really saying that. It's all internal. I'm just going to go out and do something because I think I can handle it. I remember this guy, Billy M., an old time from Howard Beach, and he always made the joke. He says, God's up there, and he's going to St. Pete. He goes, look, Pete, Ben's going to do this one on his own. Watch him screw it up. And believe me, it was true. It worked that way. So I spent a lot of time, trying to, understand, not so much understand, but, sort of almost forcing it in my life because that self-will would still come in. It's not a big deal. And I heard that expression, well, we don't trip over mountains. We trip over, anthills and stuff. So it's the little things that I can just keep putting aside. I remember a sponsor saying, this thing was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I said, well, those straws shouldn't be there. As one comes in, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Then nothing should be mounting up. And I remember Liz B. saying that to me in my early days. She goes, you got a resentment, you got 3 minutes. She goes, that's it, get rid of it. Otherwise, it's going to start festering. So, I do my prayers. I pray constantly. I pray in the morning. It says upon awakening. There are times I'll jump out of bed. I have to go to the bathroom. I'm sorry, I'm over 60. And that's what happens to us guys. And then I'm in the bathroom. So, I'm here. I might as well jump in the shower. But, and it works in both ways. Sometimes I'll just say, God, I need some help today. As soon as I'm going to sit inside, we're going to have some talk. So at least I acknowledge I need help. Because I'll jump in the shower, and all of a sudden I'm thinking about what somebody said last night. I want to kick the living daylights out of them. And I'm like, geez, I'm just in the shower, and it's already. So that's why upon awakening, I don't even know if I tell my wife the story. One day, my car was in the shop or something, and she was going to drive me to work. And usually, I don't leave until, it's right in the neighborhood. I don't leave until 8:30. She was going to take me at a quarter after 7. And I was going to hang around and get coffee, go have breakfast in a restaurant or something before I went into work. And I could have swore her to say, yeah, we're going to leave about 7:00. And I'm like, 7:00. So I wake up the next morning. She's in the shower, and I'm like, 7:00, boy, if she tries even to, I got all this anger and stuff. I'm having this terrible fight with my wife. She's in the shower.
And it's terrible. I'm going up and back, and she's not even there. And then I finally, you know, it's nice we can laugh about it, but at that moment, I was like, I couldn't believe how the anger. And I said, what's wrong with you? And I started to pray on it, and I said, what time are we leaving? She goes, you know, around 7:20. I went, oh, okay. You know, when we talk about how we create our own situations. You know, when a friend of mine one time, he was driving a taxi, and he said he gave an old lady a hard time, so when she got out of the car, he got stuck on a bridge. There was a traffic jam or something. So that was God's way of punishing me. And I asked him, I said, were there other cars on that bridge? He goes, yeah. And I said, do you think everybody at that time did something wrong? And God was anointed. And God is punishing all of those people just to get at you? But the thing is that he felt that way. And that's when we create our own punishment. We think it's God punishing us. And well, God's doing this for me. God, you know, and it's stuff that's happening in life because we're not taking the right path. And you know, it's like when I hear people say, you know, I'm going to do the next right thing. Do you know what it is? You know, I mean, sometimes I think it's right. I think, you know, and I guess if I don't get in touch with John, I have a network of people. And I don't care if you got 2 years. If you went through the work, if you got that God in your life, my humility is shot now. I don't care. You know, I'm not, well, I need to go to, I got 18 years. I need to go with somebody with at least 20. It doesn't matter anymore. I need help. I don't want to go back where I came from. And I'm going to ask somebody. And even if it's decent, at least it's something. It's going to take me out of my own stupid thinking, and it's a start. The prayer. I know. Sometimes I get lightheaded too. I got a whole bunch of things going on, jeez. But anyway, I get lightheaded when I get up too fast. So watch me when I get up out of this chair, guys. Right? My wife and I went shopping one time, and we get out of the car. It doesn't hit me right away. So we get out of the car. We walk into the mall. Right here in Valley Stream, she goes inside, and I started to get a little lightheaded, and I'm leaning against the wall, and I call her up, and I said, didn't you see me standing outside? She goes, yeah, but I thought you were praying. She goes, God, you always pray. But that's one of the nice reputations to have, you know, that I pray a lot, and you know, and it's a struggle sometimes. You know, you think so many years you got it down pat, and you can still, you know, screw up. You know, I don't put limits on my higher power, you know, because I don't think he has the power. It's my thinking, it's my belief system. I just think he says, you know, some things you do on your own, you know. I just stop blaming God for all these, you know, some of these things that happened in my life. I think I put it on Facebook a week or so ago that God doesn't cause tragedies, neither does he find me a parking spot, you know. But if it works for somebody else, that's okay. Again, I don't know what anybody's belief system, as silly as it may sound to me, as long as they believe it and it works for them, you know, that's okay. Like I said, I see too many people here that think they got it, you know, the spiritual elite, and then some guy says something a little off the wall and they smirk. I'm like, just thank God the guy's here, that's all. You know, and anyway, getting back to the prayer part, the prayer's a big part of everything I do, and I can tell you exactly sometimes when I know exactly when I specific instances. You know, before I'd gotten knee surgery, and again, you know, like I said, it was an accident I had quite some time ago, but it's deteriorating. But we were standing online, my wife, and we were shopping, and it was in Burlington, and I'm getting really aggravated. How can she do this to me? She knows I'm in pain. I'm not saying a word to her. This is all up here. You know, we're standing online. We're waiting to pay the cashier, and boy, I'm fuming. Now I'm going back to all the times she asked me to go to the bank, but she doesn't want me to use the ATM, and there's a line at the bank, and I'm like, make me wait online and stuff. And so after we left the Burlington, we went to Saturday evening, and we went to Mass that night, and I'm sitting there, and like, the priest says, stand. Nope, no way. I didn't get my revenge yet, you know. It's festering in here. You know, when they talk about in the fourth step, you know, we don't retaliate. It's up here too. Well, they're thinking that takes over. And I'm sitting there, and my priest says stand. No, priest says kneel. Nope, not happening. And I'm making sure she's watching me. You know, she's getting her eye. You know, she's not looking at the priest. She's looking at me. You know, I'm not moving. You know, I'm going to show her. I'm going to lay the Lord down. And all of a sudden, it just hit me, you know, why, stupid, why don't you just get down on your knees once? And God, I was removed. And I sat down, and I talked to her about it. She goes, oh, I didn't know. I mean, I had the car wreck, you're supposed to know I'm in all this pain, and no. And again,
you know, I prayed on it and finally was able to sit and discuss. She says, I still don't want you to do the ATM, but if the bank is crowded, don't. You don't have to wait online. You know, and again, it was just a matter of talking things out. I can remember another time I was at the New York State Informational Workshop. I was public information chair, and my friend Tony was the special needs chair. And he wanted me, Ben, make sure you come to my workshop, and we need your support, because I had done special needs at the county level. And so, you know, I shared a little bit on special needs. I mentioned how I think it originated as SOS, Sober Over 60. It was for old-timers that had difficulty, driving, night vision and stuff, not being able to drive. And then it picked up from there. I think there was a woman named Cookie and Denise. I think they sort of picked it up, the special needs, and it took off. So after the workshop, we're breaking for lunch, and this 70-year-old man comes up to me, tells me, I'm over 70 years old, and he's in my face yelling, I resent what you said, and I said, I'm just reciting AA history. I said, if you can still do these things at 70, God bless you. But he wouldn't let go, and I'm pissed off because I know I'm not supposed to say anything back, you know, just like smile and say whatever you say, you know. And how do I get revenge? I can't, you know. Fortunately, my service sponsor, Billy C., was there, and a very good guy, you know, and not just a service junkie. You know, I've gone to him for some help, too. We'd sit there and talk at conferences and stuff. And he said to me, you need to pray on it, Ben. Let it go. It's no big deal. And I said, no big deal. All right. So instead of eating lunch, I went up to my room, and I prayed. I meditated some more. And so I went back down to the cafeteria. Lunch was almost over. Some of the guys were still sitting around, and they started talking, joking, and laughing. And my friend Tony said to me, it worked. I says, what are you talking about? He says, you went to the room and you prayed, right? I said, yeah. I said, look at you laughing. I said, oh, yeah. And it was great because my workshop was right after lunch, too, so I had to be in, you know, good spiritual condition. And that was another thing that was important also. My job here is, it tells us in the seventh step, the ninth step, you know, to God and to others, you know, and wasn't about me anymore. And I have to be, you know, whether I'm upset with something at the house or if somebody cuts me off on the road. Once I get to that meeting, I sometimes have to sit in that car and pray, because when I get there, like the fifth tradition, I have to be prepared to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And it doesn't have to be the newcomer, and it could be me, you know. I just have to be prepared to listen to what the speaker has to say. You know, when the guy cuts you off, now right away the ego gets in the way. You know, when you're driving along, the guy cuts you off, and because the Chevy next to you and the Toyota on the other side, they saw they could cut you off, and they think you're a wuss if you don't go after them, right? That's my thinking. So, and now I'm going to go after this guy and chase him with all this anger, and this guy didn't know he made a mistake. Maybe he's just a bad driver, whatever the case may be. And he's going to go home, and he's going to kiss the wife, and he's going to have a nice dinner. And I'm like, well, Fester, I'm going to go home, I'm going to kick the cat, I'm going to slap the kid in the head, I'm going to abuse the wife, because I'm, you know. And it's the gradual, you know, then I would, if this guy cuts me off, I'd start to learn after being in the fellowship that, you know, let him, maybe a big guy will go after him and beat the daylights out of him, or maybe God will punish him. And then as I progressed more, I realized it didn't matter what happened to this guy. It didn't matter. It was none of my business what happened to him. The only thing I needed to be concerned about was what was happening to me. As long as I didn't act on it. And my sponsor was strong with that stuff. I'd call him up, you know what he said to me, that son of a bitch, he did this, he said that. And he would, Ben, shut up. I said, shut up. And I said, yeah, but John, he said this. He said, I don't care what he said. I don't sponsor him. I'm only concerned about how you're reacting to it. And I was ranting and raving. So it doesn't matter about the other guy. It's how I was reacting to it. And these are, again, they're all important tools, you know. And again, the prayer had to come in. And I can tell you, one of the latest incidents with my prayer, geez. You know, we were on our Disney cruise, like I said, we do everything Disney, and I was in a lot of pain. And to top it off with my other stuff, I had a 3 implants done, you know, the teeth, a couple of years back, and one of them wasn't working anymore. It was like, tooth was wobbling, and the doctor said, we can't do anything right now, go on your vacation, when you come back, it'll get loose, and for some reason, it just started to get painful, and I was miserable. When you talk about this hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, you better put pain in there, because I was one irritable SOB. I'm not going to say I had a terrible time, that wouldn't be right. But I had some, you know, very uncomfortable, you know. Like I said, I always get to rent the scooter to go to the theme parks. Now I needed to go everywhere. The doctor always gives me an injection in my back so I can walk a little bit, so, you know, I can get from point A to point B. But now I was able to go even less because of the pain in my knee. And I love watching the little kids on vacation. They have such a wonderful, they're innocent. They have such a wonderful time. They see all the Disney characters, the princesses, and watch the kids run up to them. They take the photos, and they get choked up. I think it's beautiful. And I found myself getting agitated that they were blocking my way to the elevator. And especially that now I have to stand even longer. The elevator goes up and, you're in the middle. And there's stuff on the second floor, the stuff on the ninth floor. And these kids, I guess they wanted to go down. I wanted to go up. And I'm like, they're in my way. And I tell you, so that was like at breakfast time. So Terry was going to go to an arts and crafts thing at 9 o'clock. And I says, well, you can go do that. And I don't usually go to the meetings on the ships, the Friends of Bill they have. I do a lot of service, and traveling, with the last few assemblies, I've been way up north, and it was a 130-mile ride, and I had my two navigators, and it took us 180 miles to get back home. And instead of coming over the Triborough Bridge or the Whitestone Bridge, we were on the West Side Highway coming by the Verrazano. I'm like, God almighty. There was a lot of prayer for that nobody got hurt. I do a lot of that stuff, and I volunteer a lot. I don't like to say no too often. I do at times, Sometimes somebody else has to do it too. So when it comes to vacations, I try to give her all the time I can. I'm not going to say, honey, I need to go to a meeting, I remember listening to a speaker tape, and he told this one, and the guy was sharing how they told him, you can't go on vacation over there. There's no meetings there. And he said, well, but God's there. And I said, well, you can bring God with you. And then I realized he's already there waiting for me. He's everywhere. I don't have to make an appointment to have God show up at Disney World. Here's where I'm staying, he's there. And again, I start my day. I love at the where we stayed, every place has like a little terrace or something. And I love getting up in the morning and I sit out there and take that quiet time. Even the first cruise I did, I had a camera. I got up early in the morning and watched the sunrise. As I'm taking the video of the sunrise, I said, there's got to be a God. This stuff like this just doesn't happen. So I was miserable on that cruise, and I said to Terry, I'm going to go to the Friends of Bill meeting there, the AA meeting. And I got down. There was an 8:30 meeting. It's only half an hour, and there's nobody there. And geez, am I in the wrong place now? I need help, and this is what you're going to do to me. But I see the waiters are there. They're folding napkins for the lunch crowd. And I guess the maitre d' was standing. And I said, this is where they have the meetings. And he goes, yeah. And I says, well, nobody's here. He goes, well, they come in and out. He said, it's not really steady. But there's Bill Caesar book there. So I started reading it. And I said, you know what? Whether anybody shows up or not, I'm spending a half hour at a meeting. I'm sitting here till 9 o'clock. I'm not moving. And I just prayed the whole time. Now I got back to the cabin. Terry walked in immediately. 10-step. God, I'm sorry. I'm so irritable. And she's a loving wife. She says, I know you're in a lot of pain. I said, I know you know. But it's not an excuse. I can be a little irritable, but I should be taking it out on you. It was all gone. The pain wasn't, but the irritability so much. I made sure I did whatever I could to enjoy myself, to make her trip enjoyable. Started smiling at the little kids again, and I'm a joke, so I like joking around with everybody. And I had a great one time. I had one of the scooters, I had my name in the front, and one of the Disney employees are called cast members, and the girl walks by and she goes, oh hi Mr. Who? She says, I can't pronounce that name. And I said, neither can I, Robert. I like to have that, I like to have that sense of humor and stuff. And it wasn't there for like the 4 or 5 days on that cruise, about 3 or 4 days actually. 3 or 4 days on that cruise ship, that humor wasn't there. And that's not me. I wasn't comfortable. And again, the prayer came through for me. I truly believe in the power of God. And I don't care what you call him. You can call him anything you want. I don't choose to call him God. That's his name, for me. But you can call them, whether it's Jehovah, Buddha, Harry, it doesn't matter. I heard somebody say one time, when we get to the top of the mountain, it's going to get the same vision for all of us. As long as we have a belief, and as long as we, it's a program here. It's a program based on reliance on God. If you have difficulty with that, that's okay. I'm not here to ram it down your throat. I have my own experience. I've enjoyed it. I've had a wonderful life. My wife comes to these. Anytime I speak someplace, it's an open meeting. She wants to come, and I asked her why, and because I met her, I already had almost 2 years of recovery, and she said to me, because I hear your story, and I don't believe all those things that you possibly could have done. She doesn't see that kind of person now, and that's a great feeling. did God put us together? I don't know. I know my first three marriages. I always, you know, I said, you know, I didn't get divorced because I was an alcoholic. I got married because I was an alcoholic. That wasn't funny. You know, I got married for all the wrong reasons. You know, selfishness. The first one I made pregnant, and you know what? I was the center of attention. I was the first one in my crowd. I was 20 years old. She was 18, and she was pregnant at 17. Her father wanted to throw me in jail. We met in high school. You know, I didn't proof her. But you know, like I said, but center of attention. Oh, I'm gonna have a kid. Everybody's like, oh, Ben's gonna have a baby. Yeah, wonderful. You know, and then the other two are the same thing. I was alone. I wanted company. Who had this? Who had that? She had her own apartment. I was trying to live with my father, yelling at me and stuff. So I can now I wanted to move out, and I couldn't afford to, because I was spending too much money on my drinking and stuff. So I finally had a girl. She had her own place, and it's all the wrong reasons I got married. But I met Terry in church. And she said she had seen me at a group anniversary in Maker. Like I said, she was already in Al-Anon from a prior relationship. And she saw me at a group anniversary. It was, as a matter of fact, I don't remember when. And she said, she wanted to approach me, but I disappeared. So then she saw me talk with this guy, Pete. And so she kind of found, you know, at church, she kind of, you know, figured it probably was an AA. But I kept on moving my seat closer every time I'd go to church. You know, I'd move one row. And I didn't find out till later on that she was moving back one seat. I was moving closer this way, and she was moving closer that way. So it was kind of funny, you know. And we would talk and stuff. And I wasn't in a rush. I people have that one-year stuff. And I don't know, the big book says we're not to be the arbiter of anyone's sex, kind of. Only thing I tell a sponsee, you know, I said, how's your relationship with God? Because, you know, you see a guy, comes around for 1 year, he hasn't done a darn thing in AA, doesn't make coffee, doesn't do anything, leaves, you know, one of the typical, comes late, leaves early, and, you know, coffee break, cigarette break, he's outside for 25 minutes, and the year's up. Well, okay, my year's up, I can go out and get a relationship now. And like, I mean, take a guy, he's here for 6 months, goes to all the work, he's sponsoring people, you tell him he's got to wait another 6 months. The only thing I ever suggest to a guy is that, how's your relationship with God? I said, you got to, perfect being, all right? If you're not good with him, how are you going to get into a relationship with someone who's not perfect? So just, and that's all I say to them. Then they make the, because they want you to make the decision. I learned that. Sponsees want you to make the decision. Well, what should I do? And when I say that to John, boy, God, a bunch of money. I remember when I did my fourth step, read it again. I wouldn't give me a straight answer. Read it again. I had to come to my own understanding. And that was important. I'm glad he did that, you know, and I do it now. People hate me, and I just go, see John. So we met in church, and she was in a relationship with an alcoholic before. And one time we were talking, and I said I wouldn't be here on this next Saturday at Mass because I'll be upstate at an assembly. And she says, what, a convention? And I says, no, that's not until March. This is just, you know, I'm a GSR. And like I said, being in Al-Anon, she was familiar with that stuff. And she goes, oh, you take your recovery seriously. And I'm like, jeez, what a pickup line now, right? I'm telling a girl I'm a GSR, and she's like, oh, wow, you know. But the best part about it was that the fact is that, you know, she was with somebody that wasn't doing the work. And I did. I finally asked her out in January, you know. So I met her in October, and we were, like, putting it up. And I finally, we went out on January, and she's not an alcoholic, but she decided she wasn't going to drink anymore either. So I got more time than her because she drank the night before we went out. She was like, I'm on a date. She drank with the girls. What was a bowling night? I guess it's allowed. I did it plenty of times. But it's been a great life, though. You know, she's always here for me. I used to tease her, you know, I don't need you. I got God. But God, she's such an important part of my life now. And I'm grateful. Whether God put us together, I don't know. But the idea is that now I'm able to, you know, like I said, I got married for all the wrong reasons the first time. You know, the bad thinking. Now I got married for the, you know, but I'd like to think of the right reasons. There weren't selfish motives. One of the best things she told my mother, you know, before mother passed away, is that he always makes me laugh. And I used to say, you know, it takes work to make a good marriage. And I said, work is such a terrible way of putting it. I said, but it takes effort. You can't just sit there and say, well, she's going to like anything I do. My wife probably will. But that's not what I was here to do. You know, it was my turn finally to get into a relationship, and what can I do to make her happy? What can I do, you know? And I can't say it in front of her how many things I didn't like doing, I did anyway. But it's a loving relationship. I got a couple of friends here. My friend Mike just showed up now. God bless him. I thought it went to late 30s. That's, you know, but... But and my friend Jimmy, they came in to support me, and I guess, and she's always been here. When I spoke at an Al-Anon convention at a banquet one year, one of the guys says, "Ben, you should see the look at your on your wife's face, the way she, the admiration to being up there speaking." And I said, "And who would have thought?" You know, I didn't know anything about service, you know, being a senior chairperson, getting up and giving reports and asking for money and stuff. I mean, in the bar, I didn't have a problem with that stuff. Now I'm doing it legit and stuff. And John taught me it, and my service sponsor, Ben, you know, he says, you know, you just keep going on and just ask God for guidance. And after God, I go to the person that did it before me and ask them. I go to the general service office. I learned to get humble. It's tough. Even I went to my sponsor. Somebody asked me why I sponsor him. And he says, "Well, you shared. You already got a sponsor." "I don't believe in that stuff." "Well, I can do a better job, you know, and I'll take you, you know." You know what? Maybe the guy that sponsored him needs to sponsor him. So, you know, he's got a reason for what he's doing. And so the ego has to get stuffed. And it takes time for that. It took a lot for me. I didn't have that white light experience that Bill had. I had that very, very slow educational variety. And coming up on 18 years, I still am involved in service. And what God has in mind for me, I don't know. I keep saying I'm tired of it. I need a rest. And I sat at the county meeting, and he says, "Well, we need a service sponsor chair." And like about 50 eyes came my way. And I went, you know what? It's not difficult. There's not a lot of committee meetings for service sponsor. And guys would just call me up and ask information. So I just took that on, and it's been great. I just did the greeting chair at the senior convention. I took something nice and easy. Had a ton of greeters. They did all the work. I just sat there. But it was great. I was visible. People coming up to me, "Oh, you're the Queens County service sponsor? Can I ask you a question?" And I tell you something. When I was in the bar, I had all the answers, and none of them were right. Now at least I have experience, legitimate experience, where I can give people guidance. And again, it's only through God's grace. I didn't write any of these books, but I followed the directions in them. Again, like I said, my sponsor said, read the literature, and that's what I had to do. And I keep it, and I insist on it. It's not a suggestion. You're going to hear a lot of stuff that's got nothing to do with AA. You're going to hear things. You're going to hear, you know. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the story. Bill said if he would have changed something, it would have changed rarely to never. And if you read our literature, Bill says he never claimed to make that statement. Never. There was a reason for way back why they thought, you know, it was going to be never. They suggested at the beginning, but they said, you know, we say never. The doctors are going to come down on us like we are perfect. So, but he never suggested of changing it back to never. So, you know, read the literature. That's where our stuff comes from. If we don't read it, somebody's going to, like I said, we have to get involved in it, because otherwise somebody else is going to write our literature for us. And I heard, I don't know, I've heard mixed emotions on that, this new play that's out there or movie, whatever it is, and whatever. You know, my friend said to me, you know, there was this thing on TV about people taking notes about their drinking and stuff. And he goes, "Well, I don't know, what's all that about, Ben? You know, they're not alcoholic." And I said, "Listen, if they have to keep a record of their drinking, they got a problem, trust me." And I want to thank you all for being here tonight and giving me the opportunity to share. Thank you.